Thank you for subscribing to InvestTalk. We'll begin in just a moment. KPP Financial Senior Vice President Justin Klein explains why a registered investment advisor firm wants to talk about real estate.
Your home is an important piece of your total financial picture. You need to make sure that when you do retire, you have a plan to maybe relocate, downsize if need be.
Contact Justin directly with a note on investtalk.com. Just select Contact Justin or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now, InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our February 24th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and I welcome all of you, and I hope you're enjoying this volatility that we're seeing in the market today and or so far this year. It's been a difficult year to invest, but luckily we have been able to manage it well for our clients, and I hope you are as well. And I'll be presenting the conference that if you're in Orange County, tomorrow I will be presenting an abbreviated version of our wealth webinar, that our wealth conference that we did over the weekend in San Jose. I'll be doing it in Tustin, California. So if you're listening in Orange County, you want to attend it. It's focused on investing in real estate, etc. Just send me a message on investtalk.com, and I'll send you over the link so you can register. Now, I'm glad you all are with us during this hour, and your questions always come first, so I do my best to answer them. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. You can call it any time of day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Leave your message, and we'll answer it on the next show, or you can just send me a note by clicking on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com. Now, Steve is in San Jose today meeting with our listeners, reviewing their portfolios, going over their financial situation, helping them decide whether they should buy or sell their real estate, whatever it is, figuring out their plan forward. And that's what you need to do. And that's why we have this show. It's why we have our business, is we help clients figure out a path forward. Now, we get many questions about stocks here on InvestTalk, and analyzing a company can be one of the hardest and most complex endeavors an investor can make, and I have some topics on that today. And there are so many variables to consider, both qualitative, meaning things that you can't really measure, but you can understand, like how strong a brand is, right? And then there's quantitative measures, like earnings per share and sales and profitability, etc. Now, both types of data inputs can be misleading from time to time, and your perception might not always be reality. So the best way to temper any noise in the information is to refer to the chart and ensure it lines up with your overall thesis. This is why we preach. There's fundamentals, which are these qualitative and quantitative factors, and then there's technicals, which are the chart. And the best way to see through the technicals is through the chart, and vice versa. The chart, when you see a positive chart, you can look back at the technical or at the fundamentals and say, is this a short-term thing or is this something more long-term? Okay, so it's balancing all of this data at the same time, which I know can be difficult, but it's important to do. Now, qualitative factors are company specific that cannot clearly be defined by numbers. Some of these factors, such as our brand quality and reputation, how strong and good the management is, industry position, are they premium brand, are they the cheap brand, customer loyalty, employee talent, patents. Now, for the average investor, these are the hardest data points really to understand, because you can't just look at a number. You really have to gauge the business. And it's not easy to just go find all of these data points, because their data points are kind of nebulous. But you need to be able to identify where they stand in general. And that's how you that's one way you target a company. Or when you're targeting a company, that's how you go through that analysis. And you have to compare those qualitative attributes to their rivals. And how do they stack up? How does Apple's brand compare to Samsung or Microsoft? Then you go, and that's simple. And I talk about those companies because that's what you know. But when you get into other industries, think of utilities. How much does brand matter? Probably not as much as technology space. But patents do. Customer loyalty does. Industry position does. Those factors, okay? So certain qualitative factors matter more in certain industries than others. Then you get to quantitative factors. These are pure numbers. It's easy to understand. Earnings yield, growth rates, profitability metrics, price to book ratio, cash flow, dividend payouts. These are data points that are the easiest to identify, but then once again, you still have to compare them to other companies in the industry. So investing is a complex world, and that's why we're here, and that's why we do what we do every day on InvestHawk, and that's why we manage so much money for clients. Because professionals like us sit in front of computer screens and read reports all day, putting the investing puzzle together. So you, as the average investor, on average, because you're the average investor, you tend to be at a disadvantage. Because you're working, you have other things going on, this isn't your primary endeavor. Now, you can do it on your own, but you have to gain the experience and discipline, have the data, etc. So that's something we talk about. That's why we have our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, to help you along. And I know it's not the easiest thing to get to, but if you're in the areas when we're doing these conferences, I really encourage you to show up. This last one over the weekend was great, and I think a lot of people got a lot out of it. So keep working, tune in, do your own research. Don't just go by what we say or any one person says. You got to put it all together. Now, do you have any more questions about analyzing a company or any money-related questions? Let's talk about it. Now, let's hear from BJ in Fremont. He's calling in live. How you doing, BJ?
Hey, Justin, thanks for taking call.
No problem.
I want your opinion about Intuit.
Okay.
It's a software, tech software company. I mean, and tech season is around. And I'm thinking, I think they're going to announce their earnings in a day or two.
Okay.
So I was just, I'm generally around this time their biggest peak is. So I'm wondering what you think, and they recently migrated to cloud offering storage of text data for customers.
Yeah.
So I think they've done that transition very well. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, so this is Intuit, and most people kind of know Intuit. I think if you are in the financial world at all, they make software like QuickBooks, TurboTax, Quicken, Mint, which is a piece of software that I use just to track my personal finance, you know, money going in and out of accounts and et cetera, investment accounts and all that, and put it, it aggregates it all together, and it's a pretty nice service. They TurboTax is obviously very popular for filing taxes, and we are in the midst of tax season. It's fallen off recently from a high of 109 or so, and hit a low of $80 after some poor earnings. I believe was that in August. Was that poor earnings?
I'm not sure what was the reason back then.
Okay, I'd have to. I would like to go back and look at that. It seems about right because it had some volatility in November, and 3 months before that, that was August, and now we're 3 months after November, getting into earnings again. It probably was earnings, and that was they lost money in the third quarter, or in the second quarter actually, and in the third quarter. Oh, no, sorry, I'm trying to look at their statements here, but the last quarter was actually good earnings. Yields 1.2%. It's rallied back. It's at about $98 a share. Technically, it looks neutral to bearish, if you ask me. It's had a big sell-off. You rallied back to the high in late in the year and sold off again. Now trying to rally back again. It's really kind of neutral to bearish, to be honest with you. Couple things I like. Good cash flow. Their debt levels are modest. I like that. Their cash flow has been falling a little bit, but not too bad. Profitability, return equity is 21%. That's good. My problem is it's expensive. P's 34. It's a little high for my taste. Even if you go by $4.32 supposed to make next year, you're still talking about a PE in the 25 range. Little expensive. I like the company. I just think it's expensive, not too attractive for me. The technical perspective doesn't look that strong. And so that's why I would say no. I would say keep it on your watch list, but I wouldn't buy it here.
Okay, what will be the entry point? I mean, if suppose down the line because of some market volatility.
I'm going to say $75 a share. It's at 98 now. Thanks for calling. Now, should I rent or buy? Which mortgage is better for me? How much will I save by increasing my mortgage payment? How much home can I afford? Should I consolidate my loans? Those are questions you can ask me. I'm a licensed realtor, so I'd love to answer any of your money questions. Stock, bond, real estate, whatever it is. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART. Now, if you're looking to catch up or get ahead on saving for retirement, there are steps you can take to do that. So we're going to talk about that, 10 ways to increase your 401k balance. That's our main talking point today, but I have some other ones as well. One I want to talk about is why Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers is calling for the $100 bill to go away. And there are others calling for other bills around the world to go away, like the $500 or 500 pound note, the 1,000 euro and $1,000 Swiss franc, or 500 Swiss franc. No, it was 1,000 Swiss franc. Basically, large denomination bills. I want to talk about why that is. The $100 bill, not saying it's going to go away, but they're talking about it. And I'm going to tell you why they are talking about it. Okay. Then I want to go over a new economic report that came out, Flash PMI, and this is signaling a heightened risk of an economic downturn, meaning a recession. So I want to talk about that. And then how a company can become one of the world's most admired. And this comes back to those qualitative factors that I was talking about earlier. So let's go to Dan in Palo Alto real quick. How you doing, Dan?
Yes, thank you. Good, Justin. Appreciate it. Listen to you on 1220.
Appreciate
I just had a quick question. I'm believing in the recession theory too, and reluctant to go long anything, but wanted to ask your opinion on taking that position, and also about Insight Pharmaceuticals, if you want.
Well, I hear that all the time. You know, the market's not doing so well, and the economy looks like it's headed south, and I should just be out of the market. Well, sure, if you don't know what you're doing and you don't really know how to navigate these type of waters, yes. But a professional like us, we're up for the year. Fairly nicely. I'm not going to tell you the exact number. It depends on which program. But our largest program is up for the year. And the way we did that is by transitioning into value stocks, because that's the way to go. But there's certain type of value stocks, right, to be in. There's ways to short the market, make money on the downside. Most of our long positions are up for the year because we transition into a certain type of stock. So it's all about finding the right opportunity. Every market has opportunity. It's about having the skill set to actually take advantage of those opportunities. So don't just poo-poo the market completely. You have to go and find the right opportunities, okay? Thanks, Dan. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and this is InvestTalk. We're here to help you with any money questions at 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give us a call right now. We have about a half hour left in the show. maybe a little bit more than that. If you want to get your call in, please do it sooner rather than later. Now, our main talking point today is about 10 ways to increase your 401k balance and improve the decisions you make so that you can grow your 401k. The 401k is the most common way people save and invest. Why? Because it never, the money in there never really hits their pocketbook. So they don't have the inkling to use it or spend any of it, right? They just put it in the account and it goes, and you invest it, and some people invest it well, most people don't. But there are ways to make sure it grows better than the average 401k, and we'll start with number one, and that's start early. So many people don't, especially when you're young. You know, I know you start with your new job and you're only making $40,000 a year or whatever, and it seems hard for you to make ends meet with such a low amount. But the sooner you start, the more it can grow, and the easier you will have, the easier time you will have saving enough money by the time you want to retire. So that's number one. Start as early as you possibly can. A lot of young savers tend to get overwhelmed with investing because they don't know what to do. Well, this is what I say. Just put it in a simple money market account, stable value fund, put it in a short-term government bond fund. It probably won't yield you much, but there's very little risk in that. And just put it all there so that you don't have really any fluctuations in the value of the account, but you at least are putting money away and it's going somewhere, okay? So that's how I would start it out if you don't know what you're doing, okay? Number two, commit a certain percentage of your income to save. Whether it's in a 401k or an IRA, the easiest is a 401k. You want to at least, the average financial advisor will say you need to save 10 to 12%. And I would agree with that, 10 to 12% of your income. So commit to a certain percentage. Just commit to it. Figure out a percentage and commit to it. That's the first place to start. Then pretend bonuses never happened. You get a bonus, put it all in your 401k. You get a raise, put that raise in your 401k. You won't feel it, okay? And then take advantage of auto-escalation. A lot of 401ks allow that, where every 6 months or year, the percentage of your deferral amount goes up. Okay, that's a feature. If you have it, you should definitely take advantage of. And then monitor your account. Don't just set it and forget it. Don't think that target dated funds are the answer, because they're not. They're not the answer. But there are. But you do need to manage it. You need to be able to rebalance on a regular basis. That is very, very important. Don't set it and forget it. Most people do. They let it go into their default option, investment option. It's called a QDIA. And it's just a default fund. Don't get suckered in to think that's where you need to invest all of your 401k. Don't get suckered in to target-dated funds, because they don't work nearly as well as the industry wants you to believe. Okay, so review your account each quarter when you get your statement and determine whether you need to make adjustments and rebalancing from, you know, if the stock market does well and your stock portion goes up, don't get greedy. Rebalance it. It's okay. And keep your portfolio balanced. Don't over-lever yourself to one particular asset class. That can really be detrimental if you have the wrong timing. Okay. And then finally, the easiest is just get your full employer match. You're turning down money. It's crazy that people don't do the full employer match. It's a piece of your salary you're entitled to. And if you don't take advantage of it, you're giving up that salary you are entitled to. All right. Let's go to Baruch in Fremont. How you doing, Baruch?
Hi, Justin. This is Baruch. My question is for the crude oil prices. What do you think? They have bottomed out and they're going up?
I think we're very close to a low. I think it's going to be this quarter. Okay, and we're over halfway through the quarter now. So I do think we're very close. Now, could we get back into get down into the low 20s? I think that's possible still. You know, we have about 6 weeks left in the quarter for that to possibly happen. But from a medium-term perspective, I think that crude is very close to a low. And if you bought today some oil stocks, you know, a year, 2-3 years from now, you'll be in good shape. Now, do I think oil is going back to $100 a barrel? No, I don't. I think there's a lot of structural changes going on with clean energy and electric cars and fracking that's going to keep a lid on oil prices to no more than probably $60 or $70 a barrel max at any given point for the next 10 or 15 years. But I do think in the medium, short to medium term, you are near a low and you can play that bounce for a year or so, but I wouldn't get too excited about it long term.
Yeah, I'm thinking to invest a little bit in USO.
No, stop. Not USO. You need to be buying oil companies. If you want to invest in oil companies, not a gimmicky ETF. This is InvestTalk. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
For our Southern California subscribers, if you're looking to buy, sell, or invest in real estate, here's a seminar for you. Learn the ins and outs of the 1031 exchange, and InvestTalk's own Justin Klein will dig into the investment side of real estate. You'll see examples, too, of current real estate investments. It's Thursday, February 25th, 5:30 p.m. at J.T. Schmid's Restaurant. That's 2415 Park Avenue in Tustin, California. And again, that's February 25th at J.T. Schmid's in Tustin. Continue with InvestTalk on this Wednesday, February 24th. And now you can think of KPP Financial as a resource for real estate answers. To get your individual question to us, ask a licensed realtor. Click on Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com or call 888-99-CHART right now.
Now, one of our top priorities, as always, is your calls. And you can call our 24-hour listener line at any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Cole from Michigan. I have a quick question. It's regarding your theme of value investing, and I was looking at Crane Company for adding to my retirement portfolio. And the ticker is CR. Thank you. Love the show. Thanks a lot. Bye.
All right, he's looking at Crane Company, and they manufacture fluid handling, aerospace, and electronic equipment, engineered materials, and merchandising systems. So it's a diversified industrial company, and they've fallen on hard times. Their 52-week high is $70.47, and that's even lower than its high from 2014. And that was at about $77. Now it's at $48.16. So it's down a lot. And they have a decent amount of debt. I'm kind of worried about that. It's not crazy high, but it's certainly on the elevated side. But their cash flows remain strong. It's not a huge company, about $2.7 billion. Yields about 2.7%. This would be a value name. This would be like a mid-cap, small-cap value a name, diversified industrial company. So I like what he's looking at. If you went to our conference over the weekend, you'll understand why value investing is going to start to become the better way to go and the outperforming area of the marketplace. And so I like what he's saying. I like what he's looking at. The big question is, because it's industrial, is it going to continue the downtrend like the overall industrial space? And if we go into recession, is that also going to continue down? And I would say yes, it probably will. So I like this company. I like its profitability. Its revenues are down, but they're not dramatic. You know, down 3% on earnings in 2016 expected. So I like it. I'd keep it on my watch list. If you're looking for it long term, you know, 5-10 years out, I think you'll be do well at these levels. But I do think you're probably going to see more downside through probably most of the year. And I wouldn't buy it until it gets to about the high 30s. Right now it's in the high 40s. That would be a much better level for me to pick it up. And that would be where I'd be more aggressive picking it up. So mid to high 30s. Okay. So thanks for that call. And let's transition to my talking points. And I want to talk about the Flash PMI. Flash PMI that came out today, and it's really signaling a heightened risk for an economic downturn. Now, a lot of, and I've been talking about this for a while. You know, the market's overvalued generally, and there's more downside for the market potentially than upside. It's kind of a cap, I think, on the upside for many reasons, including the fact that the Fed wants to raise rates, the fact that market generally is overvalued, but that's mainly on just on the growth side, okay? So when I talk about a recession, don't think that this means that you can't make money. When I talk about a bear market, don't think that this means that you can't make money, because either the opportunities are in the cheap areas of the marketplace, and there are some that have now cropped up. There are areas of the marketplace that just simply do better during a bear market, and you can still make money in. And then there's opportunities to sell. And when I mean sell current positions, but also short either the overall market or individual names. And you can make money that way as well. I say this constantly. I think it's one of the best messages I can give to you, is that opportunity isn't always buying. It can be selling as well. Think of real estate in 2005 and 6. It was a great opportunity to sell what you had. Just like it's a pretty good opportunity to sell generally in this market, real estate market. Okay? So always think of opportunity as both ways. Now, the Flash PMI came out, and this is from Market, and they are a research firm. And this is from the chief economist over at Market, M-A-R-K-I-T. And the February Flash PMI survey signals stagnation. And it shows that the U.S. economy is falling into contraction in the first quarter. It shows that business activity is stagnating as growth slowed for the third consecutive month. And slumping business confidence and an increased downturn in order book backlogs suggest there is worse to come. Now, the manufacturing and service PMI surveys fell to 50.1, meaning flat. Anything above 50 is growth. Anything below 50 is shrinkage. And we're at 50.1. We're basically flat. So it's clear that business confidence in the service sector has faltered significantly, reaching the lowest levels in 5.5 years in February. The backlogs of work fell for the sixth time in the past 7 months. That's at the steepest rate since August 2013. Both manufacturing and services providers reported dwindling backlogs of work in February, suggesting that they're facing deteriorating demand conditions. Inflows of new business hit a 13-month low in services, while falling exports led to a market slowdown in new order growth among good producers. Okay, so understand that. The economy is slowing, and that just means that you have to be more selective and know where the opportunities are in this market. Now let's go to Ken in San Diego. How are you doing, Ken?
Hi, Justin. I have a question. A few minutes ago, you mentioned putting money in a short-term bond fund. And would that be a short-term investment-grade type?
Yes. Short-term investment grade is a good way to go. However, if you look at investment grade recently, the investment grade sector, it hasn't been saved from the downturn in the bond market. It hasn't been saved. Now, high yields sold off more, but the yield spreads on investment grade are also widening out. And the way you look at that is LQ. IBOXQD is the ETF that you follow. That's the iShares iBox Investment Grade ETF. And that continues to be in a downtrend while government bonds are increasing in value. Okay, so don't think that if you have a recession that the investment grade market will be completely immune. There is still risk there. There's just less risk than the government bond market. Now, is it a bad place to be? I'm not saying it's a bad place to be, but understand that it's not without risks.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Do you have time for another one?
Sure.
Yeah. I've been over the last 2 or 3 years putting money into a Vanguard equity income fund.
Mm-hmm.
Investor series shares, mm-hmm. And of course I'm down on it now a little bit, but do you think it's okay to go ahead and invest in that over time?
Well, it's a good fund. He's asking about the Vanguard Equity Income Fund. The symbol is VEIPX. This is a good fund. Don't get me. This is actually a very good fund. So if you're looking to invest over the long term, it's fine. It's fine. But if they go into recession, this is almost 100% stocks. This is all stocks. Okay, about 90% domestic and 10% foreign. So you go into a global bear market, this will decline. Don't think it won't. You know, year to date it's down 3%, whereas the market is down roughly 6%. So it's doing better than the market. But it'll do better than the market in a bear market. But if the market goes down 50%, it still can lose 20, 30% of its value. So don't think that it's without risk. Is it a good fund? Is it a very good fund long term? Yes, it's a very good fund long term. But this goes back to what I talk about all the time is understanding your risk tolerance. And Ken, forgive me, but you sound a little older, right? Are you retired?
I'm 78.
Yeah, you're 78. So while this is a good equity fund, you know, it yields about 3%, understand if this is a large part of your portfolio and you go into a bear market, it's still going to go down significantly. So this is why we help clients. We do a full assessment of their portfolio and we see, okay, in aggregate, what is the risk that you're taking? Is this what percentage of your portfolio is this, Ken?
Oh, it's a very small percentage.
So if it's very small percentage and the rest of your portfolio is on the conservative side, you'll probably be okay. But if you want, you can email me, go to investdoc.com, click on Contact Justin, send me a list. I'll email you back. You can send me a list of your positions, how much in each position, and I can do a full analysis and say you're taking X your risk score is X, and if the market goes down into a bear market like we had in 08, your portfolio would likely go down X. Those are the type of analysis that we can do for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Like I said, I'm already down some on everything I have.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that this could get a lot worse?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Oh. Okay.
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 Thanks for calling,
Ken.
Thanks
a lot, Justin.
No problem. Let's go to Sean in San Jose. How you doing, Sean?
Good. How are you, Justin?
Doing well.
Good. Great. Good to hear. Love the show. Listen to it all the time.
Appreciate it.
I have some positions in GTN. My take on oil is like within 2 years from now, we might see anywhere from 40 to 45. So I expect, you know, that to come up. And, you know, I love the fact that they pay the monthly dividend.
Yeah.
What I was thinking, though, is I don't want to put all my capital into that. I'd like to, so I was thinking about doing some XLE.
Okay.
Although I kind of don't like the price-to-earnings ratio of Zom and Chevron, but, you know, I guess it's pretty hard to diversify when you only have a small bit of capital. So my thought was doing a little XLE, and I think I've already missed the boat on SLW and GDX.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
I think in the short term, you have missed the boat on SLW and GDX. But I think gold's going to be going a lot higher. We have, last year we started a position in gold miners because they were cheap. They got a little cheaper than we expected, but they're starting to come back, and that tide is turning. And I think it's just the beginning. Now, I think you'll have a pullback from these levels, and that will be a place to get in. You're going to need to know which ones. SLW is one that we do own for our managed accounts. GDX is not. We like to buy specific names. So I think you're fine there. SLW, or you're looking at a XLE as well. You're trying to get in, diversify yourself into the energy sector. You're a little
bit
more...
Go for it. I wouldn't call it diversification necessarily.
Yeah. Well, I know we like ExxonMobil and Chevron. I know you're a little bit worried about them. The reason we like them is because we do think oil, I don't think oil prices are going to go skyrocketing. And I think they'll stay in a relatively low range, you know, between $25 and $50, $60 a barrel. And in that environment, Exxon and Chevron will still do pretty well because they have areas of their business that are actually do better when oil prices are lower. So they have a diversified business, good cash flow, strong balance sheet to purchase some of the shale names that go out of business, etc. And so I think that is, I know you said you don't like the price to earnings ratio, but their strength is very good. And they're the largest holdings in XLE. So if you want to diversify, I think XLE is not a bad way to go.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, because I don't have enough equity to go specifically into CVX or ZOM.
OIH is another potential idea, but I think XLE is better. OIH is the oil service names like Schlumberger, etc. But I do think I do think XLE is better.
Yeah, I was looking into those. I don't really like the drillers. Too many drillers.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
No problem, Sean. Thanks for calling. Now, I want to quickly get to my talking point today about the $100 bill. And former Secretary of the Treasury, Lawrence Summers, has called for the $100 bill to be executed. The Financial Times reported that the European Central Bank, as well, is planning on killing another big bill overseas. And that is the 500 euro note. And in an op-ed for the Washington Post, Summers cited a new study from Harvard's Kennedy School by Peter Sands, and he's the president emeritus of Harvard, and he makes a strong case for eliminating the 50 pound note, the 500 euro note, the 1,000 Swiss franc note, and the $100 bill, because he says that these are the preferred payment mechanisms of those pursuing illicit activities. Gives them anonymity and the lack of transaction record they offer, and the relative ease with which they can be transported and moved. For me, I think this is a cop-out. And I'm going to tell you after the break why I think this is a cop-out and why I think there are ulterior motives to getting rid of these notes. Our Invest Talk anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I want to hear from you. We have about 8 more minutes left in the show to get your call in. So if you're going to call, do it ASAP. I'm here to answer your questions, any money questions, at 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left in the show, so give me a call now if you do have a question. Now, I'm talking about the $100 bill as well as the 500 pound note, the 500 euro note, sorry, the 50 pound note, and the 1,000 Swiss franc notes. And there are calls to get rid of them all because they say that, the pundits say that this is the preferred payment mechanism for pursuing illicit activities. Okay? For tax evasion, corruption, terrorism, you know, your garden variety money laundering for criminal enterprises. And everyone says that these are bills that really the average person doing legit things doesn't use. And I would kind of argue against that. I've certainly used $100 bills many times, and it's nice to have that. You know, I have a few $100 just hanging around my house, just so that, you know, who knows, banks are closed for whatever reason, I have cash, and it's nice not to have to stash 20s everywhere. But what they're saying is that removing large notes such as these would make it extremely difficult for criminals. And a briefcase full of $100 bills is about $1 million, and it weighs about 27 pounds. So basically, you're saying is it would if you had to fill those with 50s, it'd be twice as much, or fill those with 20s, it'd be five times as much, 135 pounds to carry $1 million, harder to hide, etc. And any organization dependent on large quantities of illicit cash would have to find another, probably more costly way of moving money. And it's likely that whatever these methods they would use would increase the likelihood of detection. That's what the argument is. And I would say bumpkiss, to be honest with you. I think they'll always find a way, no matter what. I think that's one of the reasons why you've seen gold surge recently, and why I think it will continue to surge. And I think this is the start, and they've been talking about it here in America, is negative interest rates. I think the Fed will move to negative interest rates at some point in the relatively near future. And why would they do that, is the big question. Why would the Fed move to negative interest rates? Well, because they want you and banks to take that money out. If it costs you money to put it, to keep your money in the bank, what are you going to do? Probably do. You're going to pull it out, and they hope spend it. Or if you keep it in, they're making money on it, the banking system safer, etc. Okay? But banks, if they're it's costing them money to have reserves in the balance sheet, which they have a lot of, they need to make loans, which would create inflation. And then, if it costs you money to put it in to keep in the bank, what would you probably do with it? You put it in things that were a store of value, because bank accounts would no longer be a store of value. You put it in things like gold. And that is why gold has been surging. And so the reason I think they're talking about getting rid of these large bills is because it would force you to put more money, keep more money in the banking system. It'd be harder to pull that money out when and store it when rates are at negative. Okay? So that's honestly what I think is going to happen. They're already talking about it with banks. They're putting it out there with their stress test that you need to be prepared for this. You already have negative rates in Japan. You already have negative rates in Europe. You have negative rates in various countries throughout the world. Has this worked? No. Is the Fed backed into a corner? Yes. Are they going to try everything they can to get themselves out of the mess they put themselves in? Yes. And I think negative rates are one of those things that they are going to try. And I think trying to get rid of these large bills is preparing for that. Now, our time is up. And a reminder that if you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can send me a note by going to investtalk.com and clicking on Contact Justin. I'm Justin Klein, Senior Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Easley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.